Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye. And joining me, we have Greg Miller.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Greg Miller.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. It's weird to be on this side of the table.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, have you ever co-hosted?
I have, and I know the name is escaping me. The best friend who sends in all the stats has counted how many times I've been on the other side. It's usually, like Andrea, I think I did it once with. Where I was coming in late, so she needed to drive the show and get everything prepared.
Interesting.
But this is going to be a regular occurrence now.
Really?
I want you getting swings with the bat. You know what I mean? Like, I want to break it up.
This is
your show too, Blessing.
Man, it feels weird.
Yeah.
To be honest, it feels odd.
It's like, it's got to be great because we picked you from obscurity. Okay, Beast, nobody had heard of him, right? You and Alex Van Aken out there panhandling at PAX shows.
Oh,
Please give us some money, some food. And here we brought you, we tossed you the keys to the Cadillac. We said, just drive it, baby.
Man, and now I'm here.
Yeah. P.S. I Love You, episode volume 2 is out, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy to see the reaction of it. That's out right now.
Podcast services. People have been super positive.
Yeah.
People have been super great. It's been awesome to see.
What did you think doing the show with me?
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed it. Felt super natural. Supernatural.
Yeah.
There were, like, ghosts coming through.
Exactly.
But it felt, laid back. And I think it's the kind of podcast that I think very much complements what KFGD is and what Gamescast is.
Yeah, I thought that yesterday was a great day of shows.
Yes.
Where Games Daily was so topical. Here's the stories. Here's what we're talking about. Here's what it is. And then PS I Love You was 2 hours of us rambling and deciding to play Peace Walker.
Games. Okay, yeah, we're going to play. We've committed to play Peace Walker on PS3, which Barrett, you're in for, right?
Now Barrett's out, apparently.
I never agreed
Kevin's
to
in,
it.
Though. Kevin got the PS3s. He's got them right over there.
Do you have him with you?
Of course he does. You think Kevin's joking around when he says he's got two PS3s ready to go for Peace Walker?
Oh my God. Dude.
We're playing Peace Walker.
Go.
We're playing Peace Walker, everybody.
If you want to know what we're talking about, go listen to the first episode of PS I Love You XOXO Volume 2. That's available right now. And it comes out every Tuesday at 6 a.m.
That's right. Yeah,
that crash?
That show's back?
Yeah, it's back, Kev. That's what you were. Yeah, we asked you the fever dream you had of us going for 2.5 hours. That's what it was about.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast services around the globe.
Today's stories include a new PS5 logo, which released right after PS I Love You XOXO.
As it always does.
An upcoming Nintendo Direct and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, my laptop locks up. Here we go. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can catch us later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in and silver members or above get the show ad free. Now it's time for some housekeeping. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack and Muhammad. Today we're brought to you by Mint Mobile, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 8 stories today.
A bigger dozen.
And you're goddamn right.
We're starting with PlayStation. The CES.
What a surprise.
Roundup. A surprise. This is coming from Eddie over at GameSpot. Sony's CES 2020 briefing brought with it some PlayStation 5 news. Though it wasn't much, Sony's Jim Ryan appeared on stage to reveal the PlayStation 5 logo. Now, Bear, I'm going to have you bring it up.
There it is.
Because, wow.
Could we have guessed? Could anybody have guessed?
Crazy how ambitious they went with it.
And that's the thing is, I know the deeper people get into PS I Love You, XOXO, Volume 2, Episode 1, they're going to get into where we got to the point of, and don't forget CES is tonight.
Yeah.
And I said I was taking an educated guess and gamble that nothing really big was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I know some smarks out on the internet are going to throw this in my face. That, this is not a big deal.
I mean, technically, You were wrong.
I was right. This is right. No, who cares?
Technically, this is a new thing. I can't remember.
I didn't say nothing was going to happen.
Okay.
I just said nothing big enough for us to hold the show was going to happen. It's the thumbnail of the fucking episode, so it didn't work. It worked out in everybody's favor. Don't worry.
But yeah, this is the PS5 logo is what we all kind of predicted. I've been seeing people have some negative opinions about the logo, which I don't get.
The negative opinions, I think, are based on the fact that it doesn't look that much different, and it's a weird thing to announce when it's not that much different, but it gets away from making it look like piss, which was the big concern. If the 5 looked more like an S, then it looks like piss.
Okay, I can see. I can see how that would turn out. But, Ryan continued, or Eddie continues in the article, says Ryan also spoke briefly about some of the features of the PlayStation 5, including 3D audio sound, adaptive triggers for the new controller, a faster SSD to improve loading times, as well as ray tracing and an Ultra HD Blu-ray drive.
Woo! Now, from what I understand, right, the Blu-ray drive is news. When that happened live, Tim was like, "Oh, finally!" And I was like, "Oh, yeah. I don't pay attention to that
because we've been waiting for this for a while. We thought it would be a UHD Blu-ray for the PS4 Pro. Did they do that? No.
That was
Xbox
One
X do it? Yeah. Why? I don't get it. So it's nice that all of the 4K Blu-rays I've been saving up for like the last like year and a half will not go to waste with the PS5.
How often are you watching a Blu-ray though? You know?
A lot.
Yeah. I feel like we're getting to the point where everything's just going to be digital.
Right.
Be great.
When I want that nice quality without the streaming like weirdness, I want that 4K Blu-ray, Greg.
It's 90% of the only thing I do with my Xbox.
Huh.
Yeah, Greg. So suck on that.
Wow. Interesting. That hurts.
But I feel like this all kind of falls in line with kind of what we were talking about yesterday at PS Love You, where we were like, oh yeah, this will probably be, if they bring up PlayStation, it'll probably be retreading what they've already
Here's
shown.
A little breadcrumb, right, in terms of the logo. Here's a breadcrumb in terms of the Blu-ray drive.
I am surprised they didn't do the Spider-Man demo that they've talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, here's the loading time on PS4, where it's like 15 seconds fast travel. Okay, here it is on PS5.
See, even that would
get
me more excited than the logo.
Yeah.
Right? And even that, and then the Blu-ray drive. And I think that's why you don't do it there, because the CES audience not necessarily is, you know, the video game type.
Mm-hmm.
They're the type who wants to see the new camera that they debuted, if you remember, at CES yesterday with Ecto-1 footage. So I was all about it. And then they debuted a new weird electric car at the end that everybody was making fun of.
Interesting. I did not catch any of it, so I did not know they did any of that.
I don't even know if it's electric. They just debuted a car at the end. I'm pretty sure it's electric, but who the hell cares?
Ryan concluded his segment by saying further specifics about the PlayStation 5, including the game lineup and other features, will be announced at a later date. If history is any indication, Sony may share more PlayStation 5 news soon. As you remember, Sony officially announced the PlayStation 4 back in February 2013, 1 month after CES that year. Greg, when do you expect us to get more?
We talked about this yesterday a little bit, right?
Yes.
Of like, I don't know if February is as much of a lock as everybody's making it out to be.
Yeah.
I really do feel these Wired articles stepped in and served the purpose of, go back and watch the February presentation, because I did recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Cerny up there giving you the very specific nitty gritty nerdy stuff about what's under the hood and what they can do with it. It's not, hey, here's the official name. Hey, here's the... Well, it was actually. Wasn't it? Yeah.
The official name?
Yeah.
I think they talked
about
PlayStation 4.
It's not. I'm sorry. It's not, here's the box, here's the price, here's the games. Mm-hmm. It was very much like, it's called PlayStation 4. This is what it can do. Blah, blah, blah. We've already had that through the Wired articles. So now you're just waiting for the big top. You're waiting for what would be their E3. Mm-hmm. And the question is, do they do that at E3 or do they do it somewhere else?
Yeah. Yeah. Number two, there's a new Nintendo Direct.
Nice try, buddy. You skipped the third image, the most important image.
Oh.
All these
right.
stats, you kidding me? This
you're
is
right.
the other nerdy thing that I thought was cool.
Bear, in the link, there will be the PlayStation 5 hardware features, which we kind of already talked about. But yeah, the 3D audio design, haptic feedback, all that stuff. And then there's another image, which I guess isn't in this article, but the PS4 stats.
Yeah.
You might be able to find that if you search.
Yeah, actually, I can shortcut you to it right away. Go to Brittany Bromrocker's Twitter. She put it up there. Because I remember we were all reacting live last night watching it through it or whatever. But yeah, 106 million PlayStation 4s sold.
Now, did we not already have that number?
It was 100 last time, right? Okay. Wasn't it? And even if it wasn't, it goes on beyond that of 1.15 billion. 1.15 billion PlayStation 4 games sold.
That's wild.
5 million PlayStation VR units sold. That's an updated number for sure.
Mm-hmm.
103 million monthly active users on the PSN. And then 38.8 million PlayStation Plus subscribers.
Mm.
Those are some juggernaut numbers.
Yeah,
right
those
there.
Are crazy numbers.
So like on average, a PlayStation 4 owner owns 10 games.
You're talking about the attach rate there?
Yeah. I think that's
you probably have a better head for math than I do. So I will say yes.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's a little low, you know?
You think so?
Yeah.
I think that is going to happen when you have a system that sells this well.
Because
you've broken through. It's not like how we used to... Like, remember the Vita attach rate we'd always talk about was crazy. Because like the people who bought Vitas were us.
Yeah.
And they were nerdy people who wanted their visual novels and Persona games and everything else, right?
Whereas here, I imagine, I guess it does make sense where a lot of the kids out there buying their PS4 Slims to play Fortnite and shit
right.
like that.
Exactly, right? It's that. Mm-hmm. It is the fact that there are, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it your dad plays the show as well? I think it's somebody else's father. There's somebody else around here whose father plays games and like he owns it for one game.
My dad, I think, still plays the N64 baseball game.
Okay, that's fair. So. I like that. I'll take it.
I will say the 5 million for PSVR even though it's a good number, but kind of saddens me a bit that more people don't own PSVR. Since that's like a whole platform with games for it.
I agree. I wish PlayStation VR was more prevalent, but I still think they're super happy with 5 million.
Yeah.
I mean, that still puts them right in the thick of that race in terms of like, hey, we're doing well. I think Quest is probably the only threat or somebody who's outpaced them now. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if you have the latest Quest numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in the chat was pointing out, should we be worried that they, under the hardware features yesterday, that they didn't say backwards compatibility?
No.
I don't think that's something that they're really going to be front-facing as far as a marketing beat. Like, that's not, like, a big thing for them. I think that'll be, like, in the background, like, oh, by the way, this can play PS4 games. And, like...
Well, they've already confirmed that PS4 discs, I think, will be compatible.
I don't think they said discs. I think that
just PS4 games will be compatible with it.
Because my prediction is it'll be digital, but I don't know if discs will work in the PS5. That'd be nice.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they've said discs are
working. Have they said discs?
Also, we are getting a couple kind of funny you're wrongs here. Mm-hmm. Mainly correcting Tim because I don't pay attention to text and don't care. Lord of Pwns says, we already knew the PS5 would have the UHD Blu-ray drive. It was mentioned in the Wired article.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So everybody just glazed over that when they fell asleep reading the Wired article about teraflops and gigaflops and what it's like to have an SD. But yeah, it's like backwards compatible and... It's got to be backwards compatible with the discs.
You'd imagine so.
I think that's something they probably can do, but I feel like if they just did digital, people would be fine with it. Maybe they feel like they could just get away with doing digital. That's kind of how I see it.
But speaking of attach rate and all that stuff, of like how many like average games one player owns, like what's the percentage of digital games that they own or physical games that they own? You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't have like the greatest internet, so they're probably not downloading a lot of games, right? So I do think there would be a significant audience of the PS5 if. The PS4 discs weren't working. I think they would be like kind of annoyed by that.
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah,
but I don't think that would.
It's not like something like Sony's worried.
Yeah, it'd be
about.
Enough. It wouldn't be enough for Sony to be like, oh yeah, we have to get the discs to work on the PS5 also. But yeah, another reason I don't think it'll be like a front facing like, oh, backwards compatibility, like they won't be hyping that up as much, is because Xbox I think still does that better, because you can play original Xbox games on the Xbox One. And you know, along with 360 games, along with obviously Xbox One games are going to work on the Xbox Series X, and so it's not really a feather in their cap that they can hold against Xbox in that way.
Yeah.
And so I don't see that being like a big thing for them. That they would mention at a CES along with SSD and all these new big technological leaps that they're making with the PS5.
Gotcha.
I'm looking at an article here from BGR.com. This is October 10th. And it's actually, the title is PS5 might not be fully backward compatible with PlayStation 4. However, several months ago, when Sony detailed some of the PS5's main features, we learned the new console will be fully backwards compatible with PS4. Mm-hmm. But Sony's newest statement suggests that might not be the case. Speaking to Famitsu, Sony wasn't able to confirm full compatibility at this time. Then there's a translated thing there, whatever. Basically, the statement, though, that's translated here is, more statement on PlayStation 5's backwards compatibility with PlayStation 4. Currently, the dev team is putting all the power on verifying whether they can secure a complete compatibility. Please wait for more information. But
so we'll see.
The last official statement from Sony outside of that was, no, it's fully backwards compatible. And then, of course, there was the rumors we came back to yesterday from the break that CES is going to say everything's backwards compatible. And we were like, no. They want to do that at CES, and they want to do it. It's back to what we're talking about. I just don't think, in terms of it not being a bullet point there, it doesn't worry me, because I think for the general tech reporter that's there, I don't think they exactly understand what that means, let alone that it's only let's say the original statement is still 100% correct. It's only backwards compatible with PS4. Mm-hmm. You have to get into such specifics with it. Why even bother putting it on there?
Yeah.
And Charles J says Oculus Quest has sold 400K, so 400,000 units as of October.
Interesting. Number two. There's a new Nintendo Direct incoming. This comes from Nintendo's Twitter. Nintendo tweets, tune in on January 9th, which is this Thursday, at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time, for roughly 20 minutes of new Pokemon information in a live-streamed Pokemon Direct presentation. Now, I expect we probably won't do anything here for that.
Sometimes Tim's crazy. I don't think he's this crazy.
Okay, because I was going to say, for something that's Pokemon-specific, you know, coming in at 6:30 a.m., might be a bit much.
Leading into Sword and Shield, he probably would have done it.
Yeah.
But now that we're post, what is this going to be?
Is Tim here?
don't know.
Because I'd like to ask him what he thinks.
Yeah, like in a post Sword and Shield world where like he was definitely like lower on the game of liking it than I was, you know, like I don't see ourselves doing anything for that.
Part of me hopes that this is Pokemon Sleep. Because I want an update on,
it's
on
just,
that.
It's just 20 minutes of Pokemon
just
Sleep.
20 minutes of a dude sleeping on screen.
Tim, you're live with Blessing and Greg on Kinda Funny Games Daily. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
Great. We were wondering what you think this Pokemon Nintendo Direct tomorrow is going to be about.
So here's the thing. It's probably going to talk about Pokemon Home a little bit, maybe Pokemon Sleep, but for them to be talking 20 minutes, I'm assuming we're getting some DLC, probably some more raid battles in Sword and Shield. But the dead high moment would be Sinnoh remakes. That's Gen 4 on the DS.
Okay. What are you predicting? Are you predicting you get those remakes?
I'm feeling pretty good about that. Now, the thing is, there's not a Let's Get High moment, which would be Let's Go, I don't know, Meryl and some other Gen 2 Pokemon for Johto.
Sure.
And I can see that being pretty likely as well, because I feel like those are a little bit easier to bang out quickly.
Are you planning on waking up and being here for a live stream at 6:30?
Yeah, I am.
Really?
Wow, there you go.
Oh, wow.
There you go, everybody. As soon as he started talking about it, I was like, oh, that's too much.
Yeah, if I had to predict what's going to be there, I think it's going to be Let's Go Johto Remix.
Okay.
I don't know.
Right.
Blessing doesn't buy it.
I don't buy it.
All right, bye.
Corey Imodio writes in and says, with Nintendo having their first Direct of the year dedicated to Pokemon, what can/should we expect to see? New game announcements already, or updates to Sword and Shield, or Pokemon, or just Pokemon Home and Sleep? Thanks, from a new Patreon sub. So I like the idea of a Let's Go Johto, and I think that will happen, but I don't think it'll happen this year. I feel like it's too soon. I feel like... What I would predict from a kind of Pokemon cycle, as we've kind of had with the Switch so far, is Let's Go of an old game, followed by a new game, followed by maybe an off year or maybe like spinoff games. Maybe we get like a Pokemon fighting game,
Detective Pikachu 2.
Yeah, Detective Pikachu 2, like something like that for this year, and then next year we see Let's Go Togepi or whatever it may be.
Because like Let's Go felt like a like kind of a holdover until the new
Sword
one.
Sword and Shield.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you there. I think it'd be a weird time for it to come out after the new one, and they're trying to sell everybody on the new one still. I think it would be like a weird time to be like, all right, well, some people really liked this one, and some people really hated it. So here's the thing to make you forget that one. I don't see Nintendo doing that.
Yeah, 3 years. I feel like 3 years between mainline Pokemon games on Switch sounds good, along with 3 years between Let's Go games and an off year for a spinoff title, or just a year without Pokemon. I feel like
a year without Pokemon.
Yeah, a year without Pokemon makes sense. And so, what I expect to see from this stream. It was like Tim was saying, right? DLC for this game. Maybe new Pokemon added, since people nonstop complained about not enough Pokemon being in this one.
Yeah, that seems likely, right? Yeah. As they try to fix that of like, here is your DLC or your additional, DLC.
Like, I doubt we'll see like a full Pokedex, but we'll probably see more Pokemon from each gen added in to try and make good for that. And then, more Gigantamax Pokemon. Maybe this is... A shot in the dark that's probably not going to happen, but maybe like a new town, something like that. That's what I expect to see. I don't really, or maybe Pokemon Sleep and Pokemon Home if we're lucky and we can get that content. But yeah, I don't see anything. I don't see a new game happening.
Okay.
But I like to see. I might be down to wake up early and come in with Tim.
Well, you have to now.
Oh, do I have to?
I definitely am not going to do it. No. I'm not going to come in here and talk about Porygon, Bulbasaur. Mm. I don't. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to do that.
I feel
like.
Name one more.
Squirrel Bunny.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Good. I got him there. The Magpie too.
Number three.
Wait. Hold on. Before we go, you knew more about Pokemon than I expected you to know. Are you a Pokemon fan? I don't know your lineage.
I played and beat Pokemon Sword and Shield. I grew up with Pokemon, but I stopped playing after Gen 3. And so after the Game Boy Advance games, Ruby and Sapphire, I stopped playing because I didn't have a DS or a 3DS.
Yeah.
But I've always been a fan of Pokemon. I just skipped some of the games. Okay. So I'm more of like a casual fan at this point, or just a lapsed fan that's come back. That's kind of where I'm at.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Number three, 10 million Mario Maker levels have been made. And this comes from Nintendo's Twitter account. Thanks to the creativity of makers around the world, there are now over 10 million playable courses in Super Mario Maker 2. To celebrate, you can now upload up to 100 courses to Course World.
So wow.
Yeah, you can upload 100 courses.
So Dan Reichert out there torturing everybody in the world.
Oh, yeah. Number four, Platinum Games receives capital investment from Tencent Holdings to expand into self-publishing. This comes from Sal Romano of Gamatsu. Bayonetta 3 and Babylon's Fall developer, I'm going to pause right there. They didn't say Nier Automata, which, shame on you, Gamatsu. Nier Automata should have been the first name in there. I'm just saying, it's the best Platinum game. Platinum Games has received a capital investment from Tencent Holdings as a basis for partnership. The company announced, the partnership has no effect on the independence of Platinum Games, which will continue operations under its current corporate structure. Platinum Games president and CEO Kenichi Sato said the company will use the capital from Tencent Holdings to, quote, strengthen our foundation as a business and expand from game development into exploring self-publishing, end quote, as well as achieve a wider global perspective while still creating high-quality games that stay true to our name. Steve0290 writes in and says, hey ho, KFGD. This morning, Platinum Games announced they were entering a capital tie-up with major Chinese game conglomerate Tencent. Brian Ashcraft's article on Kotaku referenced the reassurance that Platinum Games kept making that nothing would change, the integrity would be kept. We saw this be upheld with when EA acquired Respawn, but now worry has resurfaced with Vince's new promotion.
Has it?
I don't know if it has. Considering what happened during the big Blizzard debacle 2019, should we be concerned about China ever increasing presence in the gaming community? Thank you kindly, Steve-O.
Yeah, see, that was the more angle I was taking from it.
Yeah,
of like, it's Tencent, as usual, getting their fingers in another pie.
Yeah.
As we've talked about so much in terms of, if you remember on Games Daily, our first year, when Tencent got where they couldn't make or sell games, right, publish games in China, and their stock started tanking, and it was that thing of like, well, remember, they have tendrils in every video game company, it seems, at this point. What's going to happen when they can't do that? And then it rebounded. It seemed like it was fine. And then sure enough, yeah, the Hong Kong, Free Hong Kong democracy Blizzard stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like a real, I think for a lot of people in the industry, the wool removed from their eyes, right? Of like, holy shit, wait a second. Like, these guys own a part of everybody.
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's the thing is that they also have their fingers in Epic. And I think Epic were the ones that came out with the statement saying, like,
we can still do whatever we want.
Yeah, we're going to do whatever we want. We are not going to allow Chinese government or Chinese politics to affect how we manage ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. And with this article saying that they are maintaining self-published, or not even self, they're going to explore doing self-publishing, because Platinum Games, they usually don't self-publish. Like, Nier Automata was published by Square Enix, Bayonetta is published by Nintendo. I can't think of other Platinum games right now, but
Mad World is by Nintendo, right?
By Nintendo, yeah. So usually they partner to publish. And it seems here that one, this is more of a partnership. This isn't affecting their independence.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mad World was Sega.
Was it Sega, really?
Yeah, according to their Wikipedia page.
Interesting. But Platinum Games is still maintaining their independence, so I'm not worried about. So far, I'm not worried about them going the way of Blizzard and, you know, bowing down to, you know, the Chinese government.
It's the normal thing of you have to wait and see, right? And like, how much do they own? What does it matter? Like, you know, what kind of share do they have? What kind of pressure do they have? What kind of the weirdest thing about it, right, is it's already one of those things of, I'm not expecting Platinum to be putting out games or social messages that would be so outrageous and rebellious, you know what I mean, already, where it's like,
I mean, Nier Automata had like a lot of political messages, like not capital A political or capital P political, but like there was a lot in there as far as what their commentary was socially and very like politically.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's in the way that like they can't really ban a player from playing Nier Automata because they're saying free Hong Kong, right? Like they don't own any like esports type games that could happen.
Yeah.
Nor do I see them really commenting in their games specifically on things having to do with the Chinese government in that way that wouldn't really alter the messaging of their games.
Yeah.
And so I think
it has to be so on the nose, it seems, for what we even expect what we think's happening behind the scenes for Tencent or whoever to get off the bench and be like that.
Yeah.
Even the Blizzard thing, right? Where it's still unclear if that was somebody told you to do that or if you just over course corrected because you understand who your parent companies are or where people are.
I'm trying to see here because they mention self-publishing, which has me excited because I think what that may open up is the idea that Bayonetta 4 could be cross-platform, right? Because right now, like, Bayonetta 3 is going to be Switch exclusive because Nintendo's publishing that.
And right? The correction, by the way, right, was that Bayonetta 1 was published by Sega.
Yeah.
Bayonetta 2 and 3 are by Nintendo.
2 and 3 are by Nintendo, yes. But, you know, Platinum usually goes to other companies to publish because they're not able to do that themselves because they're an independent studio. And so the idea that that this investment could lead to them self-publishing more, I think could open up that game, Bayonetta 4 specifically, because Bayonetta, I think, is really their only franchise right now that's truly...
Get Vanquish back. You're already putting out this 10th anniversary of Vanquish and Bayonetta. Come on. Yeah. Get Vanquish back out there.
And so I think that could be exciting in that way. Number 5, Yakuza Like a Dragon might be getting an English language dub. This comes from James O'Connor over at GameSpot. Yakuza Like a Dragon, the next game in the Yakuza series, might be getting an English dub. While the first Yakuza on PS2 received a much derided dub when it released outside of Japan, subsequent entries have been in Japanese only. Now it looks like the latest Yakuza might give players the option of playing in English. An eagle-eyed fan on forum Reset Era noticed that the game was listed on the site for PCB Productions, with the studio receiving a credit for, quote, talent direction, mocap, vocap, dialogue production in the game. This suggests that they have worked on an English language track for the game, and the credit has since been removed. The company is based in Los Angeles and has produced English dialogue for Persona 2 through 4, Catherine, and several other Japanese titles. Yakuza developer Ryu Ga Gotoku Studio also included an English language voice option in their 2019 game Judgment, and since the latest Yakuza introduces a fresh new cast, it makes sense to add English voice acting to the game despite not doing so with previous Yakuza titles. PCB Productions handle talent, direction, and dialogue production on the title. This is, it's worth noting, not absolute confirmation that Yakuza Like a Dragon will definitely receive an English language voice track. However, it seems very likely. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think it's pretty much a lock.
100%. I think Judgment found not more success, but definitely was an easier pill to swallow for people who got excited for it. I forget the director, and none of the screen people are in here, but the director of Parasite, right, just won a Golden Globe.
Yes.
And when he got up there, he's right. I'm paraphrasing, but his speech basically was had a line in it that was like, there's a world of amazing film if you can get over the 1-inch barrier of captions.
Yeah.
Like, right, if you can get over subtitles. Mm-hmm. And so I think that while that's true, I think that does hold people back from necessarily jumping into Yakuza. And I think when Judgment came out and was like, hey, we have an English track, for better or worse, I think the main character in Judgment sounded great in English. Mm-hmm. Some of the side characters, like, ooh, okay, like, maybe I'd rather read this than see it. Yeah, I think it makes sense that moving forward they would do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and this honestly makes it more likely that I jump into the Yakuza Like a
Dragon. Yeah, have you played any Yakuza?
I actually started playing Yakuza 0 last week because I was curious.
Yeah.
And I've not gone back to it. I've only played the first couple hours because I've just been like jumping in between games. But I really want to get into Yakuza. I almost bought Judgment when that came out.
Sure.
But I think that came out with... I think Mario Maker came out around the same time. I think I just got way more into Mario Maker, and so I just decided to skip on it for then.
Yeah.
But I really want to get into that franchise, or at least like a title in that franchise, because I like how quirky it seems.
Sure,
I like that depiction of Tokyo. I like I like everything they're doing. And so far, from the first couple of hours I played of Yakuza 0, I really like the story they're setting up. It all,
yeah,
it
really
all seems
at.
Really cool. And I'm a person that prefers dubs over subs. I know that might cause a dumpster fire because people out there are really,
hey, you know what?
Really, Less, all about their subs.
The dubs in Persona 5, pretty good. The dubs in My Hero,
that's what I'm saying, dude.
Academia, pretty good.
My dubs favorite anime, Yu Yu Hakusho,
ooh,
great dub. It's an awesome dub.
Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, amazing dub.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but yeah,
watch it.
I hadn't actually seen a lot about this new Yakuza game, so I was reading about it while you went for it. I didn't realize they were moving away from Kazuma. I didn't realize they were putting a new main character in there. That gets me excited, because that was my deal. It was like, When I came to IGN, started reviewing the Yakuza games, and dug them, really dug Kaz, and enjoyed playing through his stories. But it was that by the third or fourth one, I was like, all right, this is just the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So a new character, new protagonist, new city. That sounds awesome.
This one is turn-based, too.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that, really?
Yeah, okay. they're totally changing the combat.
Oh, fuck yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Another departure from the previous Yakuza game is the battle system. Instead of the real-time beat-em-up mechanics of the previous games, Yakuza, Like a Dragon, features turn-based RPG-type combat with a four-person battle team. Sega said they want to try a different style of gameplay, but that if it's badly received, they will return to the real-time combat for future. Luckily, there's like 900 Yakuza games if you want that.
Exactly. Like, I had to look it up because I was like, is this Yakuza 5? And I looked up and I was like, oh, no, this is 7.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, that's not including 0. This is like the 8th Yakuza game. In the mainline Yakuza games, that's not even counting the zombie game on PS3 that I can't remember the name of. Yeah. Oh, you reviewed it? Was it good?
I'm that old. It was fine. Mm. It was weird, obviously, right? Like, it was, you know, bizarre.
Mm.
Did the Yakuza Vita game ever come out? You remember this?
No.
Let me stop right there. I know it never came out in America. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if it ever came out in Japan.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, God, I was so excited for it because that'd be the perfect thing. Mm-hmm. Vita, walking around, beat them up, you keep going.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Number 6, Microsoft registers next-gen Xbox Series X, quote, Power Your Dreams slogan trademark. This is from Ernoot van de Velde at WCCF Tech. Microsoft has registered a trademark for its next-gen Xbox Series X slogan, Power Your Dreams. The slogan was already used upon the reveal of Microsoft's next-generation Xbox console last month, and the Redmond-based tech company has now applied for a trademark, quote, Power Your Dreams with Xbox Series X, end quote, Microsoft's message from last month reads. The Power Your Dreams slogan trademark was registered on December 31st and is currently being initialized. From the looks of it, this slogan will be the official catchphrase for Microsoft's upcoming next-generation console. For the Xbox One, Microsoft regularly used the, quote, jump-ahead phrase. The enhanced Xbox One console, the Xbox One X, is often presented as, quote, the world's most powerful console, end quote. So it seems like we're going to hear that Power Your Dreams slogan a lot more this year.
I like it, and I think it also works both ways, right? Where Power Your Dreams, sure, but again, like, from what the rumors have been and then exactly what Phil said, like, power is what Xbox One Series X is all about.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be outpowered this generation.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to toss it in there, both for the, it's like, I'm going to play games and accomplish my dreams, let alone the fact that this is the most powerful system on the market, theoretically.
I agree. And I like the slogan also. Makes me wonder what the PS5 slogan is going to be. Because PS4 was what?
PS5. You know you're going to buy it. That's the slogan.
PS5. You already know.
Patapon 2. You know what I mean? It's just that.
PS4s, they went hard with their PS4. Was it Greatness Awaits? Greatness Awaits.
Yeah.
I didn't like that one.
Really? What? Oh my God, with the commercials?
I like the commercials. I just didn't like Greatness. Like, it felt too grand, but like, not like, because at the time, right, the launch titles for PS5 were like Killzone, Shadowfall, and like Resogun was cool.
Mm.
And you had like Assassin's Creed Black Flag and all these games that great were game. Like, a lot of people do love Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Yeah. I haven't played it, but
what?
No, I'm not an Assassin's Creed guy. But I guess it might be a personal thing because looking at that launch lineup for PS4, I wasn't excited, and so for the
it wasn't great.
Bless, they didn't say greatness is right now. They said greatness. Fair. Oh wait, they understood the life cycle of PlayStation 4.
I was gonna say because even like 2014, that was the year after the PS4 release. 2014 was like the hypest year, and so greatness awaits. Seeing that all year, I was just like, where is it? Where is the greatness?
Like, keep waiting.
And it took until 2015 for me to be like, okay, it's here.
I finally bought a PS4 when they officially announced Batman Arkham Knight, and they announced it for summer 2014.
Yeah.
And then like a week after I bought my PS4, they're like, it's delayed a year. I was like, fuck. Mm.
And then like, look at this cool Arkham Knight special edition we have that comes bundled with the game.
Mm.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
I bought a PS3 for The Last Guardian.
Oof. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Not just for Last Guardian, but that was a big
one. I bought an N64 for Superman 64. So. Don't worry, man. We're all there.
Number 7, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze lead designer has returned to Retro Studios. This comes from James O'Connor over at GameSpot. And that's 2 points for James so far.
Wow.
Yeah. An important figure has returned to Retro Studios, the developer behind Metroid Prime series and both Donkey Kong Country Returns and Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. VGC is reporting that Stephen Dupree, the lead designer of Tropical Freeze, has returned to Retro Studios after leaving for 2 years to work on Super Lucky's Tale at Playful Corp. Dupree, who also worked on Donkey Kong Country Returns and Mario Kart 7, could be working on Metroid Prime 4, the studio's only current confirmed game. The game was restarted in early 2019 and handed over to Retro Studios. It was previously being worked on by an unconfirmed developer. About half the core team behind Metroid Prime 3 is still at Retro Studios. It's also possible that Dupree has returned to work on another project, though. Tropical Freeze sold well over a million copies on the Switch, and it's possible that Retro Studios will be put to work on a follow-up. The studio is currently hiring for multiple positions. And you saw me looking at job listings when you first came in.
Day two on the job. I'm looking at Nintendo job listings. Yeah. I'm like, really, Bless, already?
Greg was like, oh, okay, well, I guess
it was a good run. You had a good run.
But that's actually what I was looking at. I was looking to see, like, okay, what are the job listings? Like, does this look like they're working on a new game? And they are, like, hiring for a lot of, like, lead positions.
Do you think this is what they're making?
I mean, I don't know if they're making a new Donkey Kong, but I think they could be working on another game outside of just Metroid Prime 4. Like, I know there is that rumored Star Fox Grand Prix.
Right, that Star Fox Racer rumored forever and ever.
Which
ever
at this point is probably just vaporware.
Yeah.
Or I guess you can't be vaporware if you were never announced officially. But
if you're rumored as much as that game's been rumored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I...
Do you think they're gearing up?
I think
a spiritual successor.
For
Donkey
Star Fox?
Kong 64.
Oh, for Donkey Kong 64. You think they're going to put out Donkey Kong 65, Barrett?
Well, that'd be awesome. Come on.
They just named it 65.
For the record, I don't understand your all love for Donkey Kong 64. If they were like, fuck it, we've made Donkey Kong 65, I would be like, pre-order right now. What do you want from me?
Dude, I'd be so hyped. But I think they could be working on a new game. I don't know. I'm probably at 50-50 right now. Whether or not, you know, they're working on a game aside from Metroid Prime 4, but I'm excited to see that that this dude's back. That's I'm trying to find his name. His name's not
from your article.
Yes.
Stephen Dupree.
Okay, I'm happy to see that Dupree's back because the Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze, both excellent games, and yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to see them get the band back together, right?
Yeah.
It's cool to see him go out and try to do something else. I should say try. Super Lucky Tail, come back, and then hopefully get back to what the IP and properties they work with there.
Yeah. Number 8, and this is our last story of the day. Will there be a Destiny movie or TV show? Bungie Dev says, quote, anything is possible. This comes from Eddie over at GameSpot. And I think this is too for Eddie also. I haven't been keeping track. It is.
GameSpot news on here, dude. You know?
Eddie and James tied right now. Will Bungie's Destiny become the latest video game to be adapted for a TV show or a movie? It's too soon to say for sure, but design lead Robbie Stevens said in a new interview that all possibilities are on the table. He told The Hollywood Reporter that because Bungie owns the Destiny IP, the studio controls the franchise completely, and this includes any transmedia efforts. Quote, anything is possible, he said, about the Destiny series expanding beyond video games. Quote, one of the advantages of Bungie fully owning the Destiny IP is that we have the freedom to make those choices whenever we think the time is right. That's all I can say about it. End quote. The Destiny series is known for its narrative depth. There's a lot going on in the sci-fi world. As such, it would seem the Destiny series is a rich tapestry for storytelling beyond games. However, as of yet, there have been no transmedia projects for Destiny on TV or the big screen. Greg,
yeah,
would you be hyped for a Destiny TV show and or movie?
No.
No?
Would
really?
When we think about Destiny, why we enjoy playing Destiny or enjoyed playing Destiny, is it the story?
I think a lot of people really like the story and the lore of that world.
I mean, for full disclosure, of course, I'm not that big of a Destiny fan. I played in Destiny 2. I haven't come back since it launched. Destiny 1 I played for a while, but I never, you know, fell in love with where I couldn't put it down.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I hear fucking Fran talk about it, he's not talking about, oh man, the Traveler and this and the Light and the Guardians. Like, he's just like, oh man, I gotta get my freaking sniper rifle.
I'll tell you when, I think it was Forsaken. That was like the Cade 6 one. When that came out, I have a few friends that are very into Destiny. Yeah. And they talk all about like, oh man, I can't believe this happened, or this thing happened with Cade 6. Oh, these two villain characters, they're awesome, all this stuff. Like, I'm often surprised by how whenever a new, like, big expansion drops for Destiny, the ones that hit, because I know, like, every now and then Sometimes you have expansions for Destiny where people are just like, okay, that wasn't all that. But when the big ones hit, it seems like the things that people are pulled into, at least one of the things, is the story and the lore there.
It's so, a cool world. Yeah. I have no doubt you can make a cool show or movie out of it. It's just like, it's the normal thing of, I don't know why we're trying to chase it all the time. And I understand for Bungie in particular, getting this question, being the people who own their, you know, future now with their having the IP, not having any parent company to worry about. I get why they want to keep those doors open and have those conversations. I just feel like it's not, it's the same way of like World of Warcraft when the Warcraft movie happened, right? It's just like, all right, well, you like the game for a reason. You don't necessarily like the movie for the same reason. I like Destiny for running around and shooting. I like raiding. I like, you know, not knowing what I'm doing and wasting in quotes 4 hours that I, in the end, I had a great time even though we didn't accomplish the task.
See, I see it as more of like a Witcher thing.
Sure.
Where the Witcher Netflix show came out, and like we talked about, I think yesterday, about like how we played that, or you played that.
Yeah.
Or you watched that, I mean, and you went and booted up the game, and you and Jen played it, right?
But even then, I feel, and I'm, that could happen. That can go both ways, right? Because you're making a good point of with The Witcher, right? I restarted the game because I felt I knew Geralt better, right? Because of what I had seen in the show and understood his motivations, understood that. The problem there is that in Destiny, whose perspective are we getting it from, right? Is it going to be, it has to be from like the kid 6's perspective or that team's, but it's like you then don't have any anchor in that battle as who you are, since it's a different kind of role-playing game, right? Yeah. This is an MMORPG.
I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You could definitely do it and learn more about the Forsaken and the Fallen and the, I'm thinking of all the robots I shot with their weird bubbly eye that then it would blow out of their chest.
The Hive or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you would get more about that. You know, the Traveler always did seem cool and what the light was. I like Destiny. I'm not trying to say I don't like Destiny. I'm just saying it's like, okay, cool. You're going to try. It's, and not to mention this is such anything's possible. Well, sure.
Yeah.
If somebody interviews me tomorrow, like, hey, Greg, are they ever gonna make a kind of funny movie? I'm gonna be like, anything's possible.
Yeah, no, for sure. But for, I think for me though, if you were to ask me like 10 video game franchises,
really,
you could see being adapted into a Netflix series. I think I might put Destiny in that.
Wow.
Just because, just from the ways I hear people talk about it,
I think
the point you're making with The Witcher, which is I think a good one, is that like you have the character of Geralt that you can connect to, and you have characters in that story, and if everything is kind of being adapted in a way where it's like, okay, yeah, the Witcher in the books and the Witcher in the movie and the Witcher in the game, you're kind of getting similar stories there, and you're just seeing that story told in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
Whereas in Destiny, I feel like Destiny is more of a world, and you know, if you make a Destiny show, you couldn't make a Destiny show where the main character is the character you're playing in Destiny, because you're playing, for the most part, a voiceless character,
sure,
you know, just like a protagonist that you're creating, who is the I forget what they're called in the Destiny.
Guardian.
The Guardian. Yeah.
You're
playing one of the Guardians, right? In a team full of Guardians.
Sure.
Right. And so if you made a Destiny show, it would have to be like, okay, maybe you do make it about Cade 6, or you make it about these specific characters in the world, or you make it about a team of Guardians that are going on and doing their own thing. But like it doesn't have that same sense of, all right, here's this arc, here's this next arc, here's this next arc. That is side by side with the game. That is doing the same things because, like, these characters need their own treatment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And you also then get pigeonholed in of, like, you know, who is, other than Cade 6, I know there's the whole team, and I know there's the Shax, right, yelling at me when I'm playing PvP. Like, it's such a fine line to walk with a game like that that is its own universe, right? That is more than, I think, just a game to so many people. It is its own universe. It is its own world. It's possible for sure, but like, even if I'm thinking Netflix, I feel like that's a bad fit for it. I think a movie's better because Netflix, I feel like, what the budget, like you're in space. Like at what point, like, you're not going to get a Mandalorian budget off of that, right? Like you have on Disney Plus. So even Mandalorian, we're watching for in review and we'd be like, ugh, this effect didn't look good. That effect didn't look good. For something set completely in space, I feel like it'd be weird to make it a Netflix show. And then granted, I know there's 100 Netflix shows that have been set in space probably. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying in the budget you'd want for this, let alone for a season one. Whereas with a movie, I think it'd be easier to tell the tale of the Traveler and your ghost coming and finding a Guardian and waking them up and taking them on their journey and starting the whole game that way.
Well, a Destiny TV show and or movie and or Netflix series is so far away, Greg.
It is.
If I wanted to know what is coming to the mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
You'd go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Before I get to Out Today, I'm going to read the ads since we're pretty far in the show. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself, what are you paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, and hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead, then passes those savings directly to you. Tim got this for his mom, and it's been a lifesaver. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. Choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door free, go to mintmobile.com/games. That's mintmobile.com/games. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/games. Out today, we have Cursed Caves for PC, Chico for PC, Avabel Online for PC, Regions of Ruin for Xbox One, and Red Dead Online kicks off 2020 with a new permanent clothing additions to the Wheeler Rawson and Co. catalog, a featured free aim series highlighting all capture game modes and much more. Plus, players who reach Moonshiner rank 3 before January 13th will be rewarded an exclusive colorway of Kelly boots, while bootleggers who flavor
It's not
any,
so easy, huh?
No, it's just that
everybody's always like, "Oh, Greg can't read."
I don't understand what any of this means. Is why I'm laughing. Who flavor any batch of moonshine will earn 500 moonshiner roll XP, and those who sell any batch of medium strength shine will get 30% discount on any Norfolk Roadster horse. I played
that,
hundreds.
That makes perfect sense. What are you talking about? You don't want to be a moonshine. You don't want your moonshine XP.
I played hundreds of hours of GTA Online, and when new people come in, I'm like, oh no, it makes perfect sense. But like reading this, I'm like, no, okay, I understand now.
I'm lost as hell.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that meant. But if you play Red Dead Online, you probably do.
You do, and you enjoy it. There's news for you.
New dates: Boiling Steel Preface, free mini VR game released January 9th, 2020. Releases January 9th, 2020, and Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition, the complete edition. Wait, is that really what it's called? TV Edition, the complete edition?
Oh, well, no, it's, okay, there's a comma
the
there.
Okay, I see. Wait, let me start that again. Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition, the complete edition of all acts and interludes of the magical, realist, point-and-click adventure game developed by Cardboard Computer will launch on January 28th, 2020. Published by Annapurna Interactive, Kentucky Route Zero TV Edition will be available for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch to coincide with the launch of the complete anthology on console. Cardboard Computer will also be releasing and publishing the fifth and final act for PC as Kentucky Route Zero PC Edition on the same date. All acts and interludes that are included on the TV edition will be available on Steam through the Kentucky Route Zero Season Pass on January 28th. It's a lot of small text.
There's a lot of different inserts in there, yeah. I'm excited for this one. This is definitely one of those games. I remember, I think we were still working at IGN when people were like, oh, you got to play this. Mm-hmm. But it's had such a arduous release schedule that I was like, I'll wait. Mm-hmm. And now it's finally here as a complete edition.
Nice. Deal of the day, Gilly Brums writes in and says, Amazon is currently running a promotion where you can nab 2 months of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate for the price of one at $15. I've ran the numbers. That's $7.50 a month. Amazon cites the deal is live until April, available only once per customer/mailing address. Get it while it's hot. Best friends, Gilly Brums. Thank you.
Good job, Gilly.
Thank you. Let's get into reader mail.
Mail call.
Groovy Muse writes in and says, good morning, Greg and Blessing. Trying to think of a name for y'all and can only come up with Blessery, which is Blessing plus Gregory. I don't like it.
We'll work on it. We'll keep workshopping it. We'll keep workshopping.
With Sony's reveal of the innovative PS5 console name, what's been your favorite console name of all time? Additionally, ooh, what's been your least favorite? My personal favorite is the GameCube. It perfectly encapsulates what that system was, a cube that played games. My least favorite, the Dreamcast. Thank you all. Thank you to all of you for making my commutes bearable, and I'm excited to be a new patron for what you have in store.
Really quick, everybody in the chat is saying gressing.
Gressing?
Gressing?
That
gressing.
Sounds like a verb.
That it sounds aggressive, and it also sounds like salad dressing, but yeah. I'm not against it.
Yeah.
Huh. Gressing.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, you know what? We'll keep workshop.
Other people are saying bleg.
I like that, because that sounds like a character from like Star Wars or like sure. Ration yeah, Clank yeah, or something. Yeah.
Bleg sells your rations on your way through Tatooine or something. Yeah, that's what Bleg's out there exactly. doing. Yeah.
Dreamcast probably would be my favorite console name.
Oh, really? You're going the opposite of what he said.
Yeah, I love the Dreamcast console name, because like it casts your dreams.
Jesus know? Christ bless it. Jesus Christ bless it. It's a great question, because I don't think about it. I think it's such a clinical sense of what the hardware is called, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and all this stuff. I've never thought about what I like as an actual name for it, right?
I would have to agree with them. I really like the GameCube. I never owned a GameCube.
I agree, actually. GameCube's a great name, right? Yeah. I also like PlayStation 2. Because I enjoy that there's like, it's fucking PlayStation 2, and you're like, PS2. Like, it made so much sense. It was so hot. Yeah. When you got the box and it just had the PS2 on it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I feel like we don't think about it anymore, but just the name PlayStation is
true.
A great name.
That's a great point, too.
Yeah. Nintendo 64,
No, that's an awful
name. That's not
Atari Jaguar.
Not
Super Nintendo.
No. Super Nintendo, that was
Super
a good
Nintendo's
one, too.
Good.
That was a good name, too.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Xbox, I don't love, but I don't hate.
See, that's the thing in general, is like, we do have to go back and have a conversation if PlayStation is the perfect name. Because once they hit it, they just numbered it or put different things on it. It was never they've never done away with it, right? It's the PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, portable, Vita, like you know what I mean? VR, like they've just added to it.
Yeah,
to
and
make
you know
it.
Exactly what it is. Like, it's a good name. Whereas Xbox, I feel like now everybody knows what Xbox is.
Right.
But
if you
put yourself back in 2001 or whenever and just try to explain to somebody like, oh yeah, I want to get the Xbox, mom. Mom might be like,
I don't want you watching the porn, right?
Exactly.
Game Gear, that's a bad one.
Yeah.
Game Boy was a good one.
I think that was good.
Wii U,
probably one of the worst
fuck
names.
Off with that. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was a terrible
one. That's like, that was when you knew Nintendo's hubris was too great. When they were like, hey, we just sold a gajillion units of the Wii.
And we're not going to look at why those sold so
We've
well.
We've changed the game for everybody. Now we introduce the Wii U.
I do think Wii is a pretty good name. Like, at first glance, I think it's weird, but I feel like over time, the Wii has like kind of cemented itself as like being like a. We think back to the Wii, and everybody actually, now that I say it out loud more and more, no, it's not a good name. Because it does.
Thank you.
You can pun it really easily.
I would say I didn't like Switch when it was first announced, but the Switch name fucking grew on me. Especially when they got like the branding like really strong, like up into the release of that console. Mm-hmm. I really started to like that.
Well, that's what you talk about when you talk about Switch and you talk about Wii, right? It is the fact that Nintendo had weird ideas and owned them. Now Wii U they couldn't own. They tried. They just couldn't do it.
Yeah, and now that I think about the Wii more, I think the thing that I liked about the Wii is how the logo looked on screen, right? When you have the WII, the way that Nintendo had it, like against the white background with the silver letters. I liked how that looks, and it looks clean. When you say it out loud, sounds dumb.
Yeah, but again, like it's such common nomenclature at this point. Like that, I think, speaks to the fact of how successful it was. Because I do remember when that got announced, when we were like, what? The Wii? What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, well, the Miis too. And they're like, oh my God, you guys are off your rockers. And then we all got it. And we're like, this is the future of
games.
And
Miis still exist to this day?
Kind of.
They do.
No, they do.
Kind of.
You can make a Mii on Switch.
I don't like that my Switch Mii, that's my icon, isn't tied to my Nintendo profile. But I also don't like a lot of things about my Nintendo profile and how that all works. So I shouldn't get into that.
And
right
to
now.
Speak to what you're saying about how Nintendo so well owns their names, like when I see the word Switch in other contexts, I think about the console now.
You still snap.
Yeah, I still snap.
Yeah.
It's a great name. The Ronin writes in and says, hey, KFGD crew, I've been a listener of All Things Kind of Funny for a couple years now, and this new year, I took the plunge and joined y'all on Patreon this year. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your exclusive post show on every episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Anyways, my question. Everyone is predicting that Xbox Game Pass is the future of gaming. The predictions always seem to point everyone going toward the subscription future for every platform. If this is the case, how sustainable do you think the current price for Game Pass is. I know we don't have actual numbers on how developers get paid on Game Pass, but knowing what we know about rising costs to game development, do you think that the price for Game Pass is something realistic for the long term, or is this Microsoft eating the cost for now to gain a big following? Love the shows.
I think it's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about this yesterday a little bit. Throw my hat in the ring of people who do not believe this Game Pass is the future of gaming. Mm-hmm. I do not think we're going to get down to where there is just subscription services and nothing else. So from that, with my feet already planted in that circle talking about this, I don't think you're going to see an outrageous price increase for Game Pass anytime soon. Mm-hmm. The only way that would happen would be if they added other things into it. Xbox Game Pass suddenly included Xbox Live and xCloud and whatever. I don't even know all they're including on it, right? Mm-hmm. That's when. But even then, I think there'd be the tiered structure of what you want. I think you're always going to be able to get it. Not like the ridiculous sales they've been running for the past 3 months, right? Of like, get it for a cent for a year or whatever the hell. Like, you'll be able to get it at this $10 range right now, $5 range, somewhere in there, depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. And I would see them introducing limitations before increasing the price, or along with a price increase, right? Where it is, you can get a $5 reoccurring Xbox Game Pass subscription, but you can only play 3 games a year, or a month. That's outrageous. Sorry. 3 games a month. And then the next tier is unlimited games a month, but it's also a little bit more. You go on that way with it. I think that's the way you'd break it down. And then I think it wouldn't be a cost getting necessarily pushed onto the consumer if the economics of this changed. Mm-hmm. I think it would go the opposite way, where suddenly it'd be on the developers not getting the funding anymore. Mm-hmm. Where Xbox is like, we're not bringing in enough money through Game Pass anymore, so let's not cut as many deals. Right now, if you're a game developer, independent or AAA, I feel like Xbox is at your door with a bucket full of money. Like, hey, do you want to do this? Because we'll do this if you want to do this. And I think you'd see that bottom start falling away, where it wasn't as many indie games. It was them trying to get in more AA, AAA. This is what we're putting in here.
Interesting. Interesting. I think I am in the bag of people who think game subscriptions are going to be like the thing. I don't think...
What does that mean to you, though? You think there's like, no, I'm not buying games ever?
No, I don't think it's that. Okay. I think it is. I think game subscriptions at a certain point, I don't think it's at any time soon, but I think at a certain point will be the way. I think it'll be like Netflix, where most of us don't own DVDs and most of us don't necessarily buy movies, but we do, like, we stream stuff on Netflix or other streaming services. I think it'll be like that, where it's the way that most people who have consoles, I feel like that, even that's a big statement, but I feel like it will be a ubiquitous way of us accessing our games. We'll be through some sort of subscription services through from each of the console manufacturers.
So you think it'll be the way we get through most of our games?
Yeah.
Because honestly, we just had a conversation that I think is very interesting to this whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where I am I wouldn't even say streaming guy, but I'm the digital media guy, right? Mm-hmm. So when we were making fun of the 4K, UHD, blah, 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 Blu-ray drives and these fucking things that I don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
It was that idea of like, when's the last time any of you bought a Blu-ray? And Kevin and Baird are like, oh, we got them stacked up. We've been doing all this stuff. And I'm like, I never do that, right? I buy them on Amazon and they're stuck in my Amazon thing, or I watch them on Netflix and I do it that way. Mm-hmm. But when for me, the highest compliment is like when I do love a movie and I know that I want it, I'm going to go buy that, you know, Blu-ray and have it there, which I always say I'm going to do and then never do. Sorry, Into the Spider-Verse. But the thing would be there, like the counter argument of that to be with games, where I feel like if I was so high with Last of Us 2, if we're in this future you're talking about, Last of Us 2, I know it's coming out. I know I want it. I know the thing. I feel like I'd buy Last of Us 2, whether it be a digital or a hard copy, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'd use the streaming services, similar to how I guess I use Game Pass now, where it was like, oh, Thief of Thieves got announced on XO18 or whatever it was, maybe E3. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play that when I get home on Game Pass, right? Like, I'm going to... Void Bastards is on Game Pass. I'm going to go jump in. The things that I want to try, but I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about them. That's how I'd use it. So I see the argument, I guess, of in a future, maybe it's already happening for a lot of people now, they're using Game Pass or PlayStation Now or whatever subscription service they're using in the future to try a bunch of stuff. And so their majority of their game time are on these services, but then the stuff they know they're buying.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, like I've been trying to figure out, like, okay, how do we consume new movies and how does that compare to games? Yeah. And like, you know, the difference with movies is movies come out to theaters.
Sure.
And for me, like when a movie comes out to DVD or home video or whatever, and I want to watch it, and it's not on any of the services because it's brand new, usually I'll just rent it on YouTube or something and watch it that way. And that's not really a thing we do yet in video games. But yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see, because I think as far as subscription services goes, I think they'll continue to grow as far as like audience and as far as like what their offerings are going to be there, and what kind of like what you're saying, right? Like Xbox Game Pass, that including Xbox Live and the two free games a month, or like whatever the service may be for Xbox that they pack in there. I think those will continue to be a bigger and bigger thing. I don't know what percentage it'll be of, like, oh yeah, gamers spend 50% of their time in their playing games from subscription services and other 50% playing games that they bought brand new. I don't know how that shakes out, but I think it's going to grow to be significant.
Yeah.
Maybe not most. Maybe it's like a 25-75 thing.
The problem, too, I think, is it's always so not short-sighted. I mean, obviously, part of the job is prognosticating and, you know, predicting and trying to read trends. This industry, year over year, changes so fast. Of like, I mean, think about it. In like, you know, you want to say 2010, sure, but like even 2015, I don't think we would have been talking about how dominant Xbox Game Pass or a subscription service like it would be, right? Like, then to have xCloud and streaming and all this other stuff on the horizon, let alone whatever PlayStation 5 is bringing to the table, like, it's so hard to say what is actually going to be there. Because remember, I always joke around about it, but like when we were coming out of the PS3 era, right, and getting ready for PlayStation 4 era, it was so much of like, well, yeah, like there won't be consoles after this one. You know what I mean? Like, this is a thing that's going away. The one box will survive. Microsoft will get out of it. Yada, yada, yada. And, like, this generation has been insane.
Let's get into your wrong. Neobiologist writes in and says, the direct is Thursday, not tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I screwed that up when I was yelling at Tim.
Okay.
It's me. Sorry, everybody.
Neobiologist also says, China stopped granting licenses to monetize online games in March 2018.
That was when I was talking about the Tencent thing of like trying to figure out when in our Games Daily history we're talking about that.
And then Capitalist Pig writes in and says, regarding what Tencent owns / invests in, and he writes in with a bunch of numbers. So 100% of 100% of Riot, 84.3% of Supercell, 80% of Grinding Gear, which does Path of Exile, 40% of Epic, 5% of Activision Blizzard. Then he says some more.
Undisclosed amount of Blue Hole PUBG, 5% of Ubisoft, 5% of Paradox, (parentheses) PC Nerd Games, 36% of Fat Shark, Vermintide, and then 29% of Funcom.
Interesting.
So yeah, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
So when that domino topples, prepare for the industry to be fucked.
But I think that is worth noting that they own 100% of Riot.
Right.
Or actually, no, I'm thinking of Blizzard. Sorry. So let's see. Play it. Did he write down how much Blizzard they own? Or Activision Blizzard?
5% of Activision
5%.
Blizzard.
5%. Okay. Gotcha.
Let me guess. Because it's running off the thing.
Yeah.
When you click on them like that, you can then read them up here. And you can expand this down. That's what I do. So smart. I drag that down, and then you can see the whole thing, and it text wraps.
Smart.
The more you know. This is how we teach the hosts as we go.
Lord of Pwn says, Nier and the Dragon Guard series is owned by Square Enix, not Platinum Games. Platinum only worked on Nier Automata. Interesting. Alex Russ says, the main character for Yakuza 7 isn't necessarily new. The main character is the main character in the Yakuza mobile game. The mobile game.
Fuck off. You know what I'm saying. Well, in the mobile game, nobody cares about this. Whatever Animal Crossing on Switch debuts, and I'm like, oh, this is new, and you're like, oh, it was in Pocket. Can't fuck off with this information. Am I wrong, Barrett?
No, you're not.
Thank you.
I was going to say, yeah. It's not like it's Kiryu anymore. That was the old guy, right?
Kazume. Or Kazum. Okay. Kaz. It was Kaz. Yeah. Kaz.
Let's see. Capitalist Pig says the Yakuza zombie game name was Yakuza Dead Souls. Daniel Biologist says the Warcraft movie was based on Warcraft 1, the RTS, not World of Warcraft.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Sorry, dorks. You know what I mean?
Borzen00 says
World of Warcraft is based on Warcraft, the RTS game, right? They're all the same universe, though, kind of, yeah? Yeah,
you're asking the wrong guy.
They all got orcs and fucking dwarves and
I think so
snakes,
but I don't want to say that 100% because you're wrong. This is gonna
torches,
keep going.
They got torches, right?
Borzen00 says, Greg, you're thinking of the effects.
The robots with the thing in their chest.
Yeah. Lord of Pwn says, breaking: Lord of the Rings Golem announced for PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC in 2021. I guess we'll talk about that tomorrow. Kebab says the compound name is Bleg. Okay, we already talked about that. More team names. It's a opinion in there. Da-da-da-da-da. More breaking news about the AMD, the Xbox AMD, which we'll cover tomorrow likely. And I think that is it.
There you go, nanobiologist. Yes, World of Warcraft is a direct sequel to Warcraft 1 through 3. So I was right. Fuck you. It's all the same thing.
Fuck you.
Greg, thanks for hosting with me.
Hey, anytime.
For today's
Bless.
Kind of Funny Games Daily.
Are you ready for some post show?
I am ready for a post show. Of course, you can check out that post show by subbing. Where,
Sirens
Greg?
Are on our end. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Get your questions in. Get the free. Get your questions in. Get the show ad free. And, of course, get the exclusive post show.
Awesome. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.